between what is growing within and what is growing without. I now believe it's important that we sing while pregnant with our dreams and troubles and want of truth and love, important that we attend our little seed of spirit with the same care we would offer an unborn life forming within us. Essential that we care for our unique body as a carrier of life magically forming within us as we make it through our days. For your meditation, center yourself and meditate with your hands on your belly, imagining that you are pregnant with a form of yourself growing within you. Breathe deeply, and when comfortable, give voice to your breath, letting your breath have whatever sound it will. Breathe slowly and fully, knowing this simple voiced breath is a song. Breathe, sing while your hands hold your spirit forming within you. September 5th. The Ground We Walk. Walker, there is no path. You make the path as you walk. Antonio Machado. I listened carefully as he described his little girl's first steps. He encouraged her to keep her eyes on him, and only when she didn't did she stumble. Only when she lost her focus, when she became too conscious of the steps she was taking, did she fall. I was afraid he was going to declare some parental primacy, that without his loving presence his little girl wouldn't be able to make her way. But to my surprise, he understood her first steps more deeply as a wisdom that affects us all. He stared off, offering slowly, "She made me realize that when I stop looking for a sense of truth, I stumble. When I lose my focus on what really matters, I fall." This small story has stayed with me, for aren't we forever taking first steps? Don't we uncover a mystery of strength by looking out before us and bringing into focus a deeper sense of truth? Isn't balance, in reality, the ability to step quite naturally, like this little girl, without too much thought, into everything larger than our fear? For your meditation, sit quietly and imagine one aspect of yourself as you would like it to be: more loving, less afraid, more confident, less distrusting, more understanding, less critical. Breathe evenly, and without troubling yourself with how, step with your heart into the field of this growth. September 6th. In Our Own Element. A fish cannot drown in water. A bird does not fall in air. Each creature God made must live in its own true nature. Mechthild of Magdeburg. Somewhere in the Middle Ages, in a remote part of Germany, this introspective seer came upon the wisdom that living in our own natural element is the surest way to know the inner prosperity of health, peace, and joy. Her examples are striking. All we have to do is put the fish in air and the bird in water to see the dangers of being what we are not. Of course, it's very clear and obvious for both the fish and the bird where they belong. Not so for us humans. Part of the blessing and challenge of being human is that we must discover our own true God-given nature. This is not some noble abstract quest, but an inner necessity. For only by living in our own element can we thrive without anxiety. And since human beings are the only life form that can drown and still go to work, the only species that can fall from the sky and still fold their laundry, it's imperative that we find that vital element that brings us alive. I vividly recall my struggles as a teenager, when my mother wanted me to be a lawyer and my father wanted me to be an architect. Somehow I knew I needed to be a poet. Something in it brought me alive. The only one to understand was my boyhood friend Vic, who in the midst of qualifying strongly for pre-med studies, realized he needed to be a florist. Something in working with flowers brought him alive. This is not about being a poet or a florist, or a doctor or a lawyer, or even an architect. It's about the true vitality that waits beneath all occupations for us to tap into if we can discover what we love. If you feel energy and excitement and a sense that life is happening for the first time, you're probably near your God-given nature. Joy in what we do is not an added feature. It is a sign of deep health. For your meditation, sit quietly and inhale your God-given nature. It's as near to you as air is to a bird. Inhale and meditate on what you must be involved in to feel your own true nature. Regardless of the job you're in, how can you be more completely who you are in a daily way? As you move through your day, involve yourself in one gesture of vitality that puts you in touch with your own true nature. September 7th, The Daily Experiment. You are the laboratory and every day is an experiment. Go and find what is new and unexpected. Joel Elkies. Every time we talk to someone, there comes back to us a map of expectation as to how we should respond. We share a confusion, we are given a direction. We share a pain, we are given an instruction. We share a desire, and we are given a plan. The power of these unspoken maps should not be underestimated. For the endless gravities of expectation we move in and out of govern most of our thinking and summon most of our energy in denying them or complying with them. In actuality, under all the plans, pressures, and expectations, under all the subtle guidance and nudging we receive from almost everyone, the next step is truly unknown and has never been taken by anyone. So our spiritual charge is to maintain the wonder of the singular explorer that each of us is. Though I treasure that wonder, I have been obedient for most of my life, doing what was expected of me and more in hopes of being loved. And I've been rebellious, doing the opposite of whatever was mildly implied, ready to break any hold another might have on me. But the freshest step has always come when I've been brave enough to land at the end of what little I know, breathing new air and feeling new feelings in reaction to no one, in wonder at what is always possible. This is a standing meditation. Center yourself, and though everyone who's ever lived has walked, realize that no one has ever taken the step you are about to take. Inhale slowly and breathe in this paradox. Exhale all your thinking about taking steps. Simply breathe and practice what is new by taking the step before you. September 8th. Outlasting the Fog. To be near something beautiful or precious, but to be unable to experience it, is the subtlest possible form of torture. Robert Johnson. We all have these moments when the rose loses its color for some reason, or the music no longer stirs us, or the sweet, gentle soul across from us no longer seems to soften our heart. To move in and out of meaning is as natural as moving in and out of light because clouds form and dissipate. It becomes torture, though, when we believe that the rose is no longer colorful or that the music is no longer stirring, and worst of all, when we conclude that the person across from us is no longer gentle or sweet. In truth, worse than not seeing at all is seeing but not being touched by what we see. Certainly things and people change, the simpatico of our needs can shift, but we have no chance of recognizing real change or loss if we can't recognize and accept our inability at times to feel what we see. Often the emotional tragedies of life begin when we rearrange our lives, changing partners, religions, and jobs, in an effort to find a sense of meaning that is sleeping numbly within us. It reminds me of a man who built a home on a cliff by the sea, only to have a month-long fog roll in. He cursed the place and moved away, but a week after he'd gone, the fog cleared. Being human, we all have fogs roll in around our heart, and often our lives depend on the quiet courage to wait for them to clear. For your meditation, sit quietly with one thing in your life that appears to have lost its meaning for you. As you breathe, let your in-breath freshen your heart. As you breathe, let your out-breath freshen your eye. Enter your day, keeping the thought of this one thing near, and from time to time, just look at it freshly. September 9th. You know too much. Two scientists traveled halfway around the world to ask a Hindu sage what he thought about their theories. When they arrived, he kindly brought them into his garden and poured them tea. Though the two small cups were full, the sage kept pouring. Tea kept overflowing, and the scientists politely but awkwardly said, "Your Holiness, the cups can hold no more." The sage stopped pouring and said, "Your minds are like the cups. You know too much. Empty your minds and come back. Then we'll talk." Leroy Little Bear. Knowing everyone's birthday is not the same as feeling the wonder of birth, nor is being accomplished in the many positions of lovemaking the same as being passionate. It was the great Canadian scholar Northrop Frye who pointed out that understanding the principles of aerodynamics has nothing to do with the experience of flying. If at times you feel numb or distanced from the essence of what you know, perhaps your mind, like the sage's teacup, is just too full. Perhaps, like a bowl too full of fish, your deepest thoughts have no room to move. Perhaps we all need from time to time to dump out all that doesn't stick, to let God, like a great wind, rim our head like an empty bowl. Information is not wisdom. The mind, while a great and irreplaceable tool, can store instead of feel, can sort instead of understand, can, like a beaver, build a dam of everything precious. If you can't speak when your mouth is stuffed with unchewed food, how can you think clearly if your mind is stuffed with undigested information? But how do we empty the mind? By not overthinking. By not storing and sorting. By not replaying fears or dreams or doubts or even praise. By choosing the most important thing on our endless list of things to do and doing that one thing fully after tearing up the list. All the wisdom traditions say to be still, that the stillness will bore holes in our useless knowing. But how do we begin? Every time you find yourself sorting life in your head, stop and notice what the brightest spot of light around you is touching. After a week of this, make a deal with yourself. Trade 5 facts about how to live for 1 hour of unplanned living. Then have some tea. For your meditation, if your mind were a suitcase and could only hold 5 things, what would they be? When experiencing something troublesome, How many times do you go over it in your mind? Why? What would happen if you only went over it once? When going to sleep, does your mind sort and file and replay information? When waking, does your mind more easily experience what's before you? If so, try to give life to the sensation of waking twice during your day. Bring only one thing from your suitcase with you today. Leave your suitcase home. September 10th. Who we are and what we know. To arrive at understanding from being one's true self is called nature. To arrive at being one's true self from understanding is called culture. Confucius. It seems we all learn in two ongoing ways. Being who we are helps us know more about this life, and what we learn helps us be who we are. If we look at how we move through our days, we can see that we are all made of different mixtures of nature and culture. As a boy, I burn my hand on a stove and understand the dangers of heat. When experience is the teacher, I am a child of nature. As a teenager, I listen to others about their failures in love, and this knowing shapes how I try. Here, understanding is the teacher, and in this moment, I am a child of culture. I must confess that encountering these definitions changed how I see myself. Instantly, I realized that though I prided myself on being deeply natural and experiential, I was in fact very cultural, mostly a watcher. It has since become clear that the danger for a natural learner is avoiding the need to turn one's experience into understanding. At these times, we become the flighty one who never strings the hurts and joys together into a lesson, the one who repeats everything. The danger for a cultural learner, however, is avoiding the need to turn one's understanding into experience. At these times, we are the weighty one who considers everything but never acts, the one who never engages anything. Either way, when we falter in applying who we are to what we know, we experience a lapse in being real. This is a chronic condition that I, for one, have experienced often. Indeed, as birds fly and molt, as spiders spin and trap, as snakes slither and shed, humans care and know. And as the bird can't find much to do with its fallen feathers, as the spider spins and gets stuck in its web, as the snake ignores its already forgotten skin, we are left with our knowledge, intent that it be useful. But the use, it seems, is in the caring. For your meditation, center yourself, and as you breathe, look over your life and try to discover whether you are more natural or cultural in how you learn. Breathe steadily and ask yourself, who is your primary teacher, experience or understanding? Note which is your strength and which you could invite more fully into your life. September 11th. The discomfort of newness. Anxiety is the dizziness of freedom. Kierkegaard. Perhaps the first time we experience such a disorientation is when we learn how to walk, when we move away from the wall or chair, away from the guiding arms of mommy or daddy. Certainly, the ability to walk is worth that discomfort in transition. It happens again when we first fall in love, when we first move our care beyond the walls we are so accustomed to. Likewise, the ability to love beyond our walls is well worth the dizziness of taking new steps. The truth is that every fresh experience has this dizziness of freedom that we must move through. Every time we reach beyond what is familiar, there's this necessary acclimation to what is new. It's the doorway to all learning. We needn't be afraid of it or give it too much power. We simply have to keep leaning into what we are learning. For your meditation, when you can, watch small birds fly. Note how sudden winds cause them to dip and swerve, and how they adjust and keep flying. Breathe deeply, and know that your heart is such a bird, and that its dips and swerves create a discomfort of newness that you have no choice but to experience if you are to keep flying. September 12th. In an Eagle's Eye. The vastness of this endless sky is reflected in the corner of an eagle's eye. In just this way, the heart, when lifted up, reflects the universe. As the moon brings sun to those turned from the light, the open heart brings love to those struggling through darkness. It's important to remember here that the moon is not the source of light, but a reflection. Likewise, as magnificent as the heart is, it's not the source of love, but a conveyor of forces often out of view when we're struggling. I've come to realize that the people I've admired throughout my life, the ones I've tried to emulate, were all like the moon appearing in the night, and though I secretly wanted to be like these wonderful people, it was their openness that allowed them to shine in the middle of my darkness, an openness I didn't need to copy or envy, just uncover in myself. I think of my grandmother, whose huge immigrant warmth enabled me to see myself, the way a full moon lets you see your hands in the dark. And there was the one teacher with the golden eye who held truth in the air before our confused young egos. And somehow it relaxed me into finding what really matters. And there was the 70-year-old priest who led my wellness group, so genuine in his love that his heart reflected everything with equal detail and compassion, reflecting our pain and grace, our fear and hope, even our confusion and certainty. All this to somehow say that to care is to rise above things without leaving them. When we care, we receive the truth that lives beneath words, and the sense of what is too much to say then reflects off our hearts, soothing those around us. For your meditation, sit with a trusted loved one and describe the heart of someone you admire. How have you benefited from this person's grace? Where does this grace live in you? Can you benefit yourself? Meditate together on the quality of heart you admire and invite it to show itself through you. September 13th. Wisdom Creatures. Show yourself and I will swim to you. As spirits in bodies, we live like whales or dolphins, always swimming near the surface, forever compelled by a light from above that we can't really make out. And just as the water brushes against the eyes of these fish as they make their way in and out of the deep, the days somehow shape how we see. So much is going on at any one time, beneath what we show the world, that all our feelings, all our thoughts and expressions splash like water on those we surface before. In this way, every person, when looked squarely in the eye, is a wisdom creature, full of things that can't be said. Each of us a spirit fish breaking through for love and air. We often don't take the risk or time to stand before another long enough for their truth to surface. This is what I need, for you to wait till I can get there, all fresh from the deep. After all the trouble we go through to find each other, we must wait over and over for our loved ones to break through with their wisdom. For your meditation, sit quietly with a loved one and facing each other center yourselves with your eyes closed. When ready, look into each other's eyes in silence. Inhale the wisdom of the other, then bow to each other. September 14th. Simple as a fish. My life is a fish, in search of bottom when I surface, in search of surface when I bottom. And the ribbon of God's sea, passing through my gills, is what I feel and think and speak. A simple fish, nosing its way along the bottom, is in itself a profound teacher, and like the deepest teachers, it doesn't even know its teaching. Yet in its tiny, efficient gill lives the mystery of how to live as a spirit on earth. As we all know, by swimming, the smallest fish takes in water, and its gill turns that water into the air by which it lives. Though there are biological details that explain the mechanics of this, in essence, it's a mystery. The question is, what in us is our gill? Our heart, our mind, our spirit, a mix of all three? Whatever it is, like the smallest fish, we must turn water into air in order to live, which for us means turning our experience into something that can sustain us. It means turning pain into wonder and heartache into joy. Nothing else matters. And just like fish, we must keep swimming to stay alive. We must keep swimming through the days. We can't stop the flow of experience or the need to take it in. Rather, all our efforts must go into learning the secret of the gill, the secret of transforming what we go through into air. So what is your gill? For me, it's my heart, and love becomes the unseeable trail I leave behind. But whatever it might be for you, it's more important to swim through the days and honor the gill inside you than to figure out how it all works. For your meditation, sit quietly and breathe slowly. As you breathe, notice how turning air into breath is what keeps you alive. Keep breathing slowly, and as you breathe, open your heart to the mystery of turning experience into feeling and pain into wonder. Inhale deeply, and let the gill inside you work. September 15th. Questions put to the sick. 3. When was the last time you told your story? A Native American medicine man. Stories are like little time capsules. They carry pieces of truth and meaning over time. Whether it's a myth from 4,000 years ago, or your own untold story from childhood, the meaning waits like a dry ration. Only by the next telling does it enlarge and soften to become edible. It's the sweat and tears of the telling that bring the meaning out of its deep sleep, as if no time has passed. It's the telling that heals. Often we repeat stories, not because we're forgetful or indulgent, though sometimes we are, but because there's too much meaning to digest in one expression. So we keep sharing the story that presses on our heart until we understand it all. I remember my first fall in love, how deep the fall and how painful the landing. When it was over, when she left me for other loves, I was devastated. Throughout my college days, my sadness was a wound that needed air, and each telling of my story, though even strangers grew tired of hearing it, each telling of her sudden eyes and her sudden leaving was a stitch that healed the wound in my heart. And when my mother-in-law lost her husband of 55 years, when I sat with her 2 weeks later, after all the flowers and speeches, she stared into that moment of his passing and told me over and over of his last breath and of finding him slumped in his chair. At first I thought her adrift, but realized later this was how she was trying on the meaning of her grief. Like a shaman or monk, she was chanting the mantra of her experience till its truth was released. Imagine how many times Paul told the story of being knocked off his horse by God. He did so most likely because with each telling he was brought deeper into revelation. Or how many times Moses told of his meetings with God? He did so, I imagine, because with each telling he saw God more clearly. And how many times did Lazarus tell of being brought back to life by Jesus? He did so, no doubt, because with each telling, he was brought deeper into his reawakening. The truth is that though we think we know what we are about to say, the story tells us and saves us in the same mysterious way that breathing is always the same but different. For your meditation, sit with a trusted loved one and take turns. Meditate on the markings on your heart. Pick one marking and watch how it changes as you breathe. After a while, tell the story of how you came to have this mark on your heart and how it affects you today. September 16th. Where we've been. I have been born again and again, and each time I have found something to love. Gordon Parks. Our ability to find something to love, and to love again for the first time, depends greatly on how we resolve and integrate where we've been before. A great model for this exists in the chambered nautilus, an exquisite shell creature that lives along the ocean floor. The nautilus is a deep-sea form of life that inches like a soft man in a hard shell, finding his prayers along the bottom. Over time, it builds a spiral shell, but always lives in the newest chamber. The other chambers, they say, contain a gas or liquid that helps the nautilus control its buoyancy. Even here, a mute lesson in how to use the past. Live in the most recent chamber and use the others to stay afloat. Can we, in this way, build strong chambers for our traumas? Not living there, but breaking our past down till it's fluid enough to lose most of its weight? Can we internalize where we've been enough to know that we are no longer living there? When we can, life will seem lighter. It's not by accident that the Nautilus turns its slow digestion of the bottom into a body that can float. It tells us that only time can put the past in perspective. And only when the past is behind us and not before us can we be open enough and empty enough to truly feel what's about to happen. Only by living in the freshest chamber of the heart can we love again and again for the first time. For your meditation, center yourself and close your eyes and imagine the passages that have brought you to who you are. Inhale evenly and see which passage holds the most feeling. Breathe steadily and ask yourself, is the past living in me, or am I living in this passage of the past? Do nothing today. Simply be with what your heart answers. Tomorrow, share the feeling with a friend. September 17th. The Lazy Susan Self. The God in us is not a half-presence. There is no screening who we are. For years I lived this way, turning the side of me to others that they could understand, spinning the aspects of my true self like a lazy Susan, offering only what others wanted or needed or felt most comfortable with. I became very good at this. Could spin in a crowd of loved ones, accommodating many needs at once. I came to believe that I was being selfless, an agile listener, reliable and giving. I thought I had found a way to be both who I am and considerate. What I didn't realize was that more and more of who I truly am was being hidden, and that showing only the part of me that others found acceptable was not being true to myself. Over time, I became a spy with my deepest feelings and beliefs. The cost, eventually, was a subtle but ever-present spiritual suffocation. No one asked me to do this. Certainly I have had wounds in my history that conditioned me to hide myself at times. But it was my own misperception of how to negotiate the world that made an art form of changing faces, even though all the faces unto themselves were true. Fear of conflict, fear of rejection, fear of not being loved, fear of showing what I believed no one else could possibly understand, a lack of trust and faith that the flower inside me could survive the elements out here. All this stayed unaddressed for years while I spun my lazy Mark self. As we live it, the line between privacy and hiddenness is very thin indeed. I have learned painfully and thoroughly that each of us is an entire symphony, and though there are times when all of us will not be heard, dis-ease begins the moment all of us is not played. For your meditation, sit quietly and meditate on one aspect of who you are that you turn away from others. It might be your gentleness or your silliness, or your sense of doubt, or your sense of dream. Breathe slowly and ask yourself, what is it you fear might happen if you let this part of you be seen? Breathe deeply and lower yourself into the center of your heart, into the place where this precious aspect lives. Breathe freely now in the safety of this moment. Be still and try to breathe this precious part of you out into the room. Note how it feels to have such a precious part of you move through you, from your heart into the air. September 18th. God's Help. We don't let go into trust until we've exhausted our egos. Rob Lehman. There's an old story about a man who was caught in a flood. First he was called and told to evacuate his home. He calmly refused, saying God would save him. The waters rushed the streets, climbing the foundations of all the homes. When the streets were filled, a rescue team in a rubber raft called to him, and he again refused, saying God would save him. The power of the water deepened, and the flood was now crashing through the windows of his home. He was now perched on his roof. A helicopter came, and he still refused, saying yet again that God would save him. Well, the flood did what floods do, and he drowned. On the other side, he was angry and bitterly questioned God and said, "Why didn't you save me? I kept my faith till the end." And God, perplexed, replied, "I tried. I called and sent a raft and a helicopter, but you wouldn't come." Like the thought of love, God starts in everything unseeable, but comes to us plainly in the things of this world. For your meditation, close your eyes and pray for one thing you need. Breathe deeply until the prayer loses all its words. Open your eyes and enter your day, listening to the things around you, for they carry what you need. September 19th. Beyond All Asking. If you try to understand love before being held, you will never feel compassion. There was a boy who knew how to make others relax by his friendly talk. And once they relaxed, he'd ask his many questions. But he always went home alone. The next day he'd talk some more, and sooner or later he'd always get to questions of love, colorful questions that would stretch and spread and fall just like leaves. He lived this way for many years, and the deep asking opened his heart. The space of his heart grew very wide, and people would come and go like birds in the orchard of questions that was his heart. But once everyone left, he was alone with all he knew. One day there was a vibrant being who would not enter the orchard of his questions. No matter how friendly he was, she wouldn't answer him. She simply fluttered close and held him, then waited in the world. It took the boy a long time, for he was now covered with the bark of a man, but he wanted to be held, and so, uprooting himself, he left the shade of his own heart and began to live. For your meditation, while breathing deeply, consider the ways you prepare yourself to be loved. With each in-breath, lift up your prerequisites to being held. With each out-breath, let go of all that is unnecessary. Breathe slowly, and begin by allowing yourself to be held by the very air. September 20th. Unconditional love. Unconditional love is not so much about how we receive and endure each other, as it's about the deep vow to never, under any condition, stop bringing the flawed truth of who we are to each other. Much is said about unconditional love today, and I fear it's been misconstrued as an extreme form of turning the other cheek, which to anyone who has been abused is not good advice. However, this exaggerated passivity is quite different from the unimpeded flow of love that carries who we are. In truth, unconditional love does not require a passive acceptance of whatever happens in the name of love. Rather, in the real spaces of our daily relationships, it means maintaining a commitment that no condition will keep us from bringing all of who we are to each other honestly. For example, on any given day, I might be preoccupied with my own needs and might overlook or bruise what you need and hurt you. But then you tell me and show me your hurt, and I feel bad, and you accept that sometimes I go blind to those around me. But we look deeply on each other, and you accept my flaws, but not my behavior, and I am grateful for the chance to work on myself. Somehow, it all brings us closer. Unconditional love is not the hole in us that receives the dirt, but the sun within that never stops shining. For your meditation, center yourself and consider a relationship in which you have recently endured some pain in the name of love. As you inhale deeply, consider the conditions that keep your pain unexpressed. As you exhale deeply, consider being unconditional as a bringing forth from within rather than the enduring of what comes from without. Enter your day and consider bringing forth who you are in the name of love. September 21st. A silent teacher. Only when I stop collecting evidence do the stones begin to speak. I want to speak to something very dear and obvious that has taken me my whole life to truly learn. We have touched on it elsewhere. More than knowledge, which I believe in, it involves knowing. I've always been a reader. The worlds opened by honest voices throughout the ages have saved me from confusion and loneliness time and time again. I have also spent roughly 50 of my 60 years in school, either as a student or a teacher. Not by chance, however, the classroom has enlarged over time to the living of life itself, and the teaching has involved less and less instructing and more the asking of simple things, the secret of their simplicity. But what I really want to say is that astonishingly, the reward for truth after all this way is not justice or knowledge or even expertise, though these things may happen, but joy. And the reward for kindness is not goodness or being thought well of, or even having kindness return, though these things may happen too. No, the reward for kindness as well is joy. After the hard years of getting a doctorate, after studying on my own hundreds of sacred texts from so many different paths, I've learned that the blessing for experiencing oneness is not the strength or clarity that arrives with it, but more deeply, a peace from dividedness. Whether resting in a hospital bed when the pain has stopped, or waking in my lover's arms as her fingers ease the worry from my head, or falling asleep with the words of someone long dead lying open on my lap, the bareness of truth and compassion is the same. It returns me to a simple, if rare, moment in which thinking and feeling and knowing and being are all the same. It's this enlivening moment, so hard to find and so elusive to hold, that is my silent teacher. For your meditation, close your eyes and bring into focus one thing you know from reading or studying that has helped you. Note where it comes into your awareness. Does it come alive in your head, in your heart, or in your stomach? Bring into focus one important thing you've learned from living. Note where it comes into your awareness. Where does it come alive? Without judging either, note the sameness or difference in how these knowings live in you. September 22nd. Facing Sacred Moments. The higher goal of spiritual living is not to amass a wealth of information, but to face sacred moments. Abraham Heschel. Maybe it's part of being American, this want to build on things instead of facing them. After all, our ancestors believed it their manifest destiny to keep moving on until they ran out of land. But now that there's nowhere left to go, a different sense of exploration that has waited centuries is calling. Instead of building a road to somewhere other than where we are, the life of spirit requires us to open doors that wait before us and within us. This is what Abraham Heschel calls facing sacred moments, the opening of doors into the life we already have. The effort to build our way elsewhere can be admirable and even heroic, but it often distracts us from inhabiting the life we are given. Certainly, there's nothing wrong with bettering our outer circumstances, but these constructions mean nothing if we never face the very pulse of life that waits like a kind mother at the edge of our exhaustion. For your meditation, sit quietly and bring to mind a sacred moment you have known. Breathe your way back to it, and as you inhale, face it. Let its light warm you from within. As you exhale, face your life today, and let what's sacred find you. September 23rd. Repetition is not failure. Repetition is not failure. Ask the waves, ask the leaves, ask the wind. There's no expected pace for inner learning. What we need to learn comes when we need it, no matter how old or young, no matter how many times we have to start over. No matter how many times we have to learn the same lesson, we fall down as many times as we need to learn how to fall and get up. We fall in love as many times as we need to learn how to hold and be held. We misunderstand the many voices of truth as many times as we need to truly hear the choir of diversity that surrounds us. We suffer our pain as often as is necessary, so we can learn how to break and how to heal. No one really likes this, of course, but we deal with our dislike in the same way, again and again, until we learn what we need to know about the humility of acceptance. For your meditation, sit quietly and bring to mind one learning that keeps returning to you. It might be about giving yourself away repeatedly, or your struggle to trust, or about a particular way you hurt others repeatedly. Sit quietly, and as you breathe, try not to resist what this recurring piece of life is trying to teach you. Sit quietly, and as you breathe, see yourself as a shore, and this recurring piece of life as a wave whose job is to make you smooth. September 24th. The Way of Individuation. Far out at sea, a tuna fleet surrounded a group of spinner dolphins swimming over a school of tuna, catching them in a gigantic net. Small, powerful speedboats circled the animals, creating a wall of sound that disoriented and terrified the dolphins, who sank down silently into the net, only the movement of their eyes showing signs of life. But when a dolphin crossed the cork line at the edge of the net, it knew it was free. It burst forward, propelled by powerful wide tail strokes. It then dove, swimming at full speed, down and away into the dark water, only to burst from the surface in a high bounding series of leaps. Jeffrey Musayef Mason. This dolphin moment reveals a recurring sequence for us as human beings. Confined against our will, or even sometimes confined with our own consent, we go lifeless as we feel the need for space. Feeling confined, fearful, enervated, not sure where the edge of the net is, this is the depressive, confusing struggle that always precedes freedom. But like these magnificent dolphins, we know the instant we are free, as an inner power overwhelms us, and we're compelled with joy to explore the deep which gives us the grace to break the surface, bounding briefly into a oneness that's hard to imagine. This whole process describes in a moment of nature what Carl Jung called the way of individuation. How a divided individual sorts through their deepest confinements in order to pursue a wholeness of being. If we have a call, it's to outlast the net so we can dive and break surface. For your meditation, center yourself and picture your spirit as a powerful dolphin. Breathe fully and try to feel the net that is confining you. Bring into view the edge of that net. What must you do to swim past the net? September 25th. To Hunt or Hide. If to hunt or hide is twin-edged madness, then faith is the courage to risk and receive. I close my eyes and am impaled by light. Robert Mason. We spend so much of our time on earth running after or running from. In our want of love, we chase after someone or set ourselves up as bait. In our dreams of success, we hunt after goals and hide from what we or others perceive as failure. And none of it, none of the strategizing to land a job or the hiding in order to prevent being hurt, none of it can reward us with peace or protect us from life. I wasted so many hours, not just in trying to get published, but in hunting for the right publisher that would make me feel worthy in the eyes of others. None of that effort, even when successful, brought me any closer to the pulse of life that writing uncovered for me in the first place. We often fantasize in secret, imagining that life is better elsewhere if we could just get there. We often work harder in our dreams than in our life. We tend to do this with our want for a more satisfying relationship, We imagine somewhere outside of the life we're living, there waits a man or woman who will alleviate all our pain and all our numbness. So we hide our dissatisfaction with the life we've created and secretly hunt for an imagined cure for what it means to be who we are. As Robert Mason so wisely infers, our recourse to complacency and unhappiness is not to hunt for bigger game or to hide our deepest hurts. Nor is it to move our inner furniture to another town or bedroom. Our greatest chance to change our life is to close our habits of mind and to open our ever-virgin hearts. For your meditation, close your eyes and breathe slowly. Imagine that what wakes in you has lived forever, and that it wakes within a soft and resilient casing of tissue that will take you wherever you want, that you have these delicate surfaces through which to feel wind and see light and sense the spirit of everything else that has lived forever. Imagine that once awake you walk in a world where small creatures fly about our heads and sing, where colorful, juicy things grow on trees, that you can eat what grows from dirt. Imagine that there's always water running nearby, that you can wash the tiredness from your face as often as you like. Imagine that once awake you live in a time where there are others you can talk to about this miracle of being alive, others you can laugh with and cry with, others you can love. Imagine you can open your eyes and dance in a world where water can fall from the sky, that you can open your throat and song can come from it, that you can find the sun and let it warm the flower of you into being. Now, open your eyes and receive that it is all true. It is all here. It is all now. September 26th. Putting down pain. The time has come to put our stones down, for hands clutching stones can't freely drum, and hearts fisting the past can't freely sing. It only took me a lifetime to learn, but the lesson is as profound as it is simple. As long as we clutch to one thing, be it a stone or rail or even a weapon, our hands can't open or reach for anything else. The timeless and essential drama of living into the unknown resides in this simple sequence. We must risk putting down the stone or stick or gun we are grasping in order to build or touch or make music of any kind. It reminds me of a friend who wouldn't let go of his past. He clutched it like a rope and was afraid that if he let go, he would fall. But as long as he fisted his history in this way, he couldn't embrace the love that was before him now, and so he never healed. It's unavoidably true. Hands must be emptied before they can be filled anew. It's the same with our hearts. It's why courage day by day is necessary. For your meditation, sit quietly and bring to mind one thing you are fisting with your heart. As you exhale, open your hands and try to let the feeling loosen in your heart. Practice using your hands to open your heart. September 27th. Leaning in. Few situations can be bettered by going berserk. Melody Beattie. It was the philosopher Michael Zimmerman who told the story of being a boy in school when someone passed him a pair of Chinese handcuffs, a seemingly innocent thimble-like casing with an opening at each end. It was passed to him without a word, and of course, through curiosity, he slipped his left forefinger in one end and then his right in the other. Mysteriously, what made them handcuffs was that the more you tried to pull your fingers out, the tighter they held you. Feeling caught, he panicked and pulled harder. The small cuffs tightened, But suddenly, it occurred to him to try the opposite, and as he leaned his fingers into the problem, the small casing slackened, and he could gently and slowly work his fingers free. So many times in life our pulling in panic only handcuffs us more tightly. In this small moment, the philosopher as a boy reveals to us the paradox that underscores all courage, that leaning into what is gripping us will allow us to work our way free. For your meditation, sit quietly and bring to mind a situation you feel stuck in, or a position you're being stubborn about. As you breathe, try to relax your self-protection so you can lean into the situation slightly. Note how this feels. Note if the energy around the situation loosens. September 28th. About forgiveness. The pain was necessary to know the truth, but we don't have to keep the pain alive to keep the truth alive. This is what has kept me from forgiveness, the feeling that all I've been through will evaporate if I don't relive it, that if those who have hurt me don't see what they've done, my suffering will have been for nothing. In this, the stone I throw in the lake knows more than I. Its ripples vanish. What it really comes down to is the clearness of heart to stop defining who I am by those who have hurt me, and to take up the risk to love myself, to validate my own existence, pain and all, from the center out. As anyone who has been wronged can attest, in order to keep the fire for justice burning, we need to keep burning our wounds open as perpetual evidence. Living like this, it's impossible to heal. Living like this, we become our own version of Prometheus, having our innards eaten daily by some large bird of woundedness. Forgiveness has deeper rewards than excusing someone for how they've hurt us. The deeper healing comes in the exchange of our resentments for inner freedom. At last, the wound, even if never acknowledged by the other person, can heal, and our life can continue. It's useful to realize that the word forgive originally meant both to give and receive, to give for. In keeping with the original meaning, we can see that the inner reward for forgiveness is the exchange of life, the give and take between our soul and the universe. It's hard to comprehend how this works, yet the mystery of true forgiveness waits in letting go of our ledgers of injustice and retribution in order to regain the feeling in our heart. We can only hope to begin this exchange today, now, by forgiving what's broken in each other and imagining through love how these holy pieces go together. For your meditation, as you breathe, let yourself feel the pain of a wound that you carry. Let yourself feel the pain of keeping the wound open as evidence of what you've suffered. As you breathe, let yourself put the indignity, the injustice, and the woundedness down. As you inhale, take in the softness and the freshness of the air. As you breathe, forgive the wound, that is, exchange the part of you that is defined by this hurt for the part of you that, without your consent, keeps healing. September 29th. Consider or enter. If you try to comprehend air before breathing it, you will die. We can only consider things so long. After a while, all the information, all the options and opinions will begin to weigh us down. After our deeper eyes have seen the situation, all the well-meaning voices telling us what we should or should not do will start to feel like strings we can't cut through. This was poor Hamlet's fate.